There's a debate, one of the IQ2 debates run by the St James Ethics Centre. It's going to be on Tuesday the 12th of August in Sydney at the City Recital Hall at Angel Place. And they're going to talk, this is going to be the topic of the debate. We are becoming enslaved by our technology. Now, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we've got heaps of new stuff now, haven't we? And it's all really good and helps us do stuff and it's really exciting. But how many times have you wished that it just didn't exist? How many times have you suspected that you or perhaps someone else in your family or a friend is getting a little bit addicted to their smartphone or their other device, and it appears to be not that they're ruling the phone, but the phone is ruling them. So the debate topic, we are becoming enslaved by our technology, is a relevant one, which is why we've invited on two of the debaters in favour of that proposition is Dr. Katina Michael from the University of Wollongong, an associate professor in the School of Information Systems and Technology. On the negative, arguing that we aren't becoming enslaved by our technology, Anthony Lowenstein, who's a journalist, author, and a weekly columnist with The Guardian. Hello, Katina. Hello, Anthony.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having us on.
Oh, no, well, thank you very much for coming on. And I do want people to text in their tips for not becoming enslaved by their technology. If you've got little practical things, little rules that you've set, maybe your children or yourself or your partner, to try and ensure you are not the servant, but you are the master or mistress, text them in on 0467 922 702 or call 1300 800 222. Anthony, I think you've got the harder side, because surely there is a very strong argument that we are just becoming weak and addicted and pathetic when it comes to phones and other devices, yes?
Well, no.
Well, no.
Obviously,
good.
No. Look,
first
on the one
debating.
Hand,
yeah.
Of course it's easy to say many of us use our phones all the time, we're obsessed with Facebook and Twitter, all that's true.
Mm.
Does that make us enslaved? Not at all. I think it makes, overall, the use of technology is not just about smartphones. Technology in the last 100 years is one example, through medicine, technology, communication, healthcare, transportation, overwhelmingly has made the world a better place, overwhelmingly has made it more connected, healthier. This doesn't mean that there aren't some people who are addicted to Twitter. I love Twitter and I use it all the time for work. Does that mean I'm enslaved by it? Absolutely not.
Well,
does it?
Well,
no.
It depends.
I would say no.
Do you find yourself when you are, you know, sharing a special moment that's with someone who's special to you, your hand just reaching almost unconsciously to your phone just to check if someone's tweeted something really interesting? Do you find that?
Well, hopefully if it's an intimate moment, I wouldn't be doing that. But I'm sure there are some people who do, listening to this show right now. But no, I think overall it's far too easy to believe that we're somehow enslaved by technology, which is overwhelmingly used to benefit. I mean, anyone who spends any time, for example, as I do for my work as a journalist, outside Western countries, in developing countries, you find, for example, the use of telephones, whether they're smartphones or normal phones, has often literally saved people's lives. It gets people information which could be vital for their daily lives. So, yes, there are some people, as I'm sure the other side will argue, who are totally obsessed with Facebook. It's a very narrow definition, we believe, on our side, of the debate.
Mm. What about you, Katina? I personally, technology clearly has made a great difference to the world, and technology is everything that's ever been invented ever since, you know, someone started hitting a rock against another rock. That's technology. But why do you think we're being enslaved by it now?
Oh, James, we're totally enslaved. I think the statistics coming out of the States is that 20% of young people are texting when they're about to make love to somebody, and that is actually a big issue, I think, because it's become almost the primary instance of our recall, as opposed to the other person physically standing next to us. So the minute we wake up, we rush off to our phone or our desktop, unless our phone is actually on our chest. We take it with us to the toilet to brush our teeth. We take it with us when we have a shower. We actually take it with us everywhere, and it's always on. We're always connected, and we don't understand what it is to be detached from it. And then I think my definition of enslavement is, if I can't do without it for 24 hours, then I believe I'm truly enslaved. But if I look back at history, just to, I guess, rebuttal Anthony's position, yes, we did, you know, evolve and create from the knife on, you know, to the spear and clothing and to the boat and the wheel and then the quill and the printing press and so forth. But the reason we innovate today is very different to how we and why we innovated in the past. Mm. So once it was for survival, then it became almost, well, it's for the shareholder. Then it moved on to, well, I'll just, you know, invent for convenience because it makes my life easier, purportedly. And now we're just inventing for the sheer sake of invention. And the motivations behind it has always been money, apart from when it was for survival. So I think this has got us into a lot of trouble.
Yeah, look, I mean, there is a distinction, Anthony. I mean, no one would disagree with you that technology has helped a lot of people. But that doesn't mean we're not enslaved by it. I mean, for you to argue, yes, millions of people have been assisted by technology, and if you took it all away, well, particularly us in the sort of developed world, would be, you know, hopeless. We wouldn't know what to do. We couldn't find shelter. We couldn't find food. We'd just, you know, wither away very quickly. But just because you make that argument, it doesn't mean we're not enslaved. Maybe enslavement is the price one pays for a comfy life.
I think in these kind of issues, it always comes down to definitions. And I would say that what we've just heard there is interesting if you're a Westerner. And in some ways, there's no doubt that many Westerners, as we both would agree, I think, and I suspect this will be the case on Tuesday night, many people, yes, use their phones all the time. Many people are obsessed with Facebook. But I keep on coming back to the same point. We've just heard the fact that technology these days or advances is purely or principally for those to make profit. To say that to someone in the vast bulk of the world, South America, Africa, to medication, absolutely, there's no doubt that pharmaceutical companies who are making drugs are making money. That's absolutely true. But tell that to someone who, for example, has HIV in Africa, who in the last 10 years, the vast majority of whom now will live longer than 5 years. That is exactly what technology has done. Profit is part of that. And I've often written a lot in the last years in my work how that's increasingly problematic. There's no doubt about that, that the profit motive is a key reason many people will develop. However, it's not the sole reason. And if you solely see this argument in a Western context, then it's very easy to say we're connected to our smartphones the whole time. We, I think, on the other side of this debate, will be arguing on Tuesday and tonight that this is a very narrow understanding of what technology has done. We don't say, of course, that there aren't some people, as we've just heard Katina rightly say, who are addicted to their smartphones, who have major problems with communication one-on-one because they see the world too much through the internet. Undeniably, that is true. But if we say that, therefore, that is the vast majority of people in the world, we would say the facts simply don't bear that out because the majority of people in the world aren't using smartphones, as one example.
Okay, what I want you both to do now is stop fighting. And, I mean, I know debates are a fight, and you've done that very well. You're both very skilled. But start getting constructive. What I want you to do is imagine someone out there who's in middle, you know, sort of middle management, not down the bottom, not up the top. He's got a fair bit of responsibility. Some people report to him. He reports to people, does something important in some company. And he or she has a tablet and a smartphone and feels that they are never free of their work and finds themselves at home, you know, the hand just creeping there, over-prioritising emails that don't really need to be answered till tomorrow, but feeling that they have to. Their kids, too, have, you know, they've all got tablets and they're on them all the time, sometimes for homework, but often not. And the teenagers, you know, spending a lot of time Facebooking and whatever. So what I want you to do is give that family some guidance for how they can maximise the benefits, the good things they can get from technology without becoming enslaved by it and allowing it to diminish or take the place of some other perhaps other meaningful things that they might have. And if you've got any suggestions at home, maybe a regime you have laid down for yourself or for other members of your family or other people you live with, then let us know. The number's 1-300-800-222 or the text 0467-922-702. So, Katina, how do you get the good stuff without the bad stuff? What do you think?
I think it's really hard, James, because what has happened is that these devices extend our working hours Many people are sleep deprived, and many listeners would be saying and agreeing with that statement.
Yep, so what do you do?
Okay, so I would say to you, at least switch off your device every day, perhaps for an hour, perhaps shut off the email, even if you're working on the computer, for example, at work, close the email so you're not knee-jerk reacting to emails that are coming through and pinging through every 5 seconds. That makes you less anxious, I think. The volume will always be there, and at the moment we are so overwhelmed with the amount of email we're receiving. So it'll always be there, always waiting for you to pile through it. The next thing I would do is switch off in a home setting at least once a month. I know I have friends of mine that will switch off every week, at least once a day.
Mm.
And it's a very
hard...
For
5 minutes?
No, no. They switch off for a good 12 hours.
Oh, that's good. That's great.
And that is during the day, not during the night time when they're supposed to be sleeping.
Yeah.
But this is a, you know, basic
catch a lot
rule.
Of aeroplanes?
Don't take your phone on vacation, for example.
Catch a lot of aeroplanes.
Well, actually, I've been on a lot of aeroplanes recently, and getting people to shut off their phone or their
harder,
laptops before we leave, you know, and we're taxiing, it's like the hostesses and the stewards are going, well, please shut down your phone now, you know? And people still can't. They creep it into their side pocket, and it's like nobody's watching, and then they pull it out again once the hostess has moved on. You know, but we all see this. We're all part of this.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, good. Good practical tips. Andy, what do you reckon?
A few things. One, I'd say that people could switch off, at least if they're working, Facebook or Twitter, unless they're using it for work. In my case, often I do. But many people don't actually need, for example, Facebook or Twitter or social media while they're actually working. So that could be switched off, or you give yourself, you check it at lunchtime or something like that, so you kind of control the use of it. There's obviously things like lockouts that many people actually use, where you are locked out of the internet, so to speak, for 3 hours, 5 hours, 2 hours, whatever you want.
Oh, so that's a... So how does that work? That's a regime you kind of impose upon yourself.
Basically.
Then, yeah.
Exactly.
And how do you do it?
Well, essentially, I mean, I personally don't use it, but I know people who do. So you, for example, say to yourself, right, it's 9 p.m, I want to do some work that I will be distracted if I can access the web.
Mm.
I want to have no access for 3 hours. You lock yourself out, and obviously there's a way to override that, but it's essentially is a way to try to manage your internet usage so you don't spend the next 3 hours surfing and finding out whatever it is as opposed to actually doing the work. A lot of people find that's a good discipline, and I personally don't use it, but I know a lot of people who do. Mm. I guess I'd also say at night times, if you're at home, if you have a family, if you have kids, that I think there is a lot of argument to be made why there's an importance to try to have a family meal. I know it's an old-fashioned idea, and it's not always possible. People might be out or they're working or the kids are at sport, whatever it may be. But I think that kind of unifying event where, yes, kids may well be checking their phone during dinner or whatever, but there is a sense somehow that there's a collective meal. There's a collective idea that you talk about the day, you explain what's been going on, you try to talk through issues. I think a lot of families do it. And I think a lot of families would like to do it, but don't. And that's one way where I'm not saying you have to turn off all the devices when you're having that meal. That would be good. Maybe not very realistic for a lot of people, but at least you have a sense that you're talking face-to-face with people for at least an hour a night.
Katina, do you get the sense that because this stuff is all so new, that really the people who are dealing with it now, all of us, no matter what your age, are the ones who are actually learning all this stuff? And in 10 or 20 years, assuming there's not a whole another load of new stuff that makes it all obsolete, but if people are still using, you know, handheld little devices, phones or whatever they are by then, they're probably phones and wallets and keys all in one, but that sort of these issues will have become less problematic because we will have kind of evolved, worked out a way to sort it all out so that we get the good stuff but we don't get the sort of bad stuff.
Fascinating. I think you're talking about technological trajectory here. And
no, I didn't know that I was, but it sounds good.
You are. You are, James. I've talked to a lot of senior management in consulting companies who actually are looking at their workforce, their new recruits at the moment. They've got 17 windows open all at once. Unfortunately, they can't pen a single document that's coherent. It's got structural problems, even spelling errors, despite that we have spelling checkers on our programs. And there is something shifting. They submit work to the senior management, and the senior management goes, what's this? You know, this is not complete work. This is not structured work. You haven't answered the question. You know, and then there's a blank look.
Yeah, right.
And so it's like, if this problem is propelled forward and is propagated, well, then what's the next generation actually going to be achieving? when they can't complete a document on time or meet a deadline.
So are you saying that idea of always multitasking, always have a number of things going, sort of rather than, I guess, the old way of sort of having a one long, boring focus concentration span, is actually diminishing some people's skills to be able to wrestle with a problem and articulate a workable solution to it?
That's definitely happening. I mean, I see that in my students. I mark assignments every day, and I see this change. It's stark. The other thing that I see is an over-reliance now on head-mounted displays, which is the new big thing, I guess, that everyone's trying to tout will be the next...
What are they?
They're things that
sounds
you wear...
Like something terrifying, like cannibals,
No, but it might be. Who knows?
What you mean cameras on your head?
Yeah, so like a typical Google Glass or iTap device or a device that on the one side is basically beaming internet script to you and, you know, the internet, and on the other side, you know, you're free to see the space around you. So,
boy, I'm looking forward to having a conversation with someone doing that. It'll just be like...
There you go.
Huh? What?
Exactly.
I'm like permanently distracted, I guess.
Totally, and I think we can't be in the virtual space and the physical space at the same time and be functional. The same way we can't have 17 windows open and think that we're going to actually be productive. So there's a point that there's information overload to the human brain, which then hits in and says, well, I'm not achieving anything. I'm not doing anything constructive.
Mm. That's all true,
yeah.
But, however...
Of course.
I mean, obviously, let's also put this in a bit of context. I mean, when the television came into being in the last sort of 50 or 60 years, obviously the US first and they came here... There were exactly the same arguments. The television was going to envelop everybody. No one was going to actually be able to focus on their life. And that of course, was made similarly with the mass production of newspapers back in the day as well. I'm not saying at all that anything that we're talking about here, there aren't serious questions about people's over-reliance on devices. I mean, I have that myself, so that's undeniably true. But I think the question, for example, of a lot of younger people having issues with literacy is not because they're on Facebook. You know, these are deeper questions about funding to schools and programs and teachers and a range of other issues. You know, the idea of saying it's because they're on the smartphone.
Wouldn't it be easier just to blame it all on Facebook? Wouldn't that be more convenient?
Wouldn't that be good?
Then we wouldn't have to have the whole...
Poor old Facebook can't defend itself, no, as if I would think that. But I just think, I guess what I'm saying is that the issues that a lot of younger people have, and there's no doubt I see this myself, I sometimes do teaching at university here in Sydney, there are sometimes issues with literacy of people who at 18, 19 should not be having it. That's absolutely true. But that's not to do with technology. I mean, in some ways, younger people now are far more better read than anyone in past generations. I mean, when I was 18, I was not reading even half of the material that most people are reading now, maybe through Facebook or maybe news and maybe entertainment information, whatever. They're reading far, far more, and technology has allowed that. Whether it's making them literate is
another question. Yeah,
you know?
No, that's very interesting. Look, we're out of time, but thank you so much, Anthony. Thank you so much, Katina.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Anthony.
Yeah, great to talk to you. So that's Katina Michael from the University of Wollongong and Anthony Lowenstein, journalist and author. And they will be but two of the several people debating the proposition that we are becoming enslaved by our technology. It's a IQ St. James Ethics Centre debate this Tuesday at the City Recital Hall, Angel Place in Sydney. Yeah.